Talking Heads on Planet Waves FM, Pacifica Radio Network. That was The Big Country from More Songs About Buildings and Food. Into Road to Nowhere from Little Creatures. That was the album I was trying to remember. The name that I think came out in maybe late 85 or early 86 as I was wrapping up my experience at the State University of New York at Buffalo, and truly miraculous things happening in those late days of my university education. Things like A Course in Miracles appearing in my life, and other kind of, let's say, radically transforming events. My choice to get out of politics happened at that time, and a number of other things. This group of people that I had formed around me, every bit as beautiful as the Planet Waves team, only we were gathered around a magazine I founded at SUNY Buffalo called Generation Magazine, which had a 30-year run. It finally went out of print, I think, in maybe, I don't know what year, but 30-year run, and founded in 84, so figure to do the math. And this album came out, and, you know, I knew we were all going to be going our separate ways, and that this beautiful thing we had created was going to disperse no longer be. And that's the way the world is, but it's also especially the way things created at universities are, because the whole experience is so intentionally transient. And I was headed back to the city to embark on a journalism career and so forth. And this song was incredibly encouraging and had this kind of ominous, mystical, listen to this wisdom kind of feeling to it. We don't know where we're going. No, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. We know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. Right? That alone is like, huh? And we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen. And we're not little children, and we know what we want, and the future is certain. Give us time to work it out. We're on the road to nowhere. Come on inside. We'll take that ride. I'm feeling okay this morning. One of my favorite David Byrne lines. I'm feeling okay this morning. And you know, we're on the road to paradise. Here we go. We're on a ride to nowhere. Come on inside. Taking that ride to nowhere, we'll take that ride. Maybe you wonder where you are. I don't care. Here is where time is on our side. Take you there. Take you there. There's a city in my mind. Come along and take that ride. And it's all right. Baby, it's all right. And it's very far away, but it's growing day by day. And it's all right. Baby, it's all right. Would you like to come along? You can help me sing this song. It's all right. Baby, it's all right. They can tell you what to do, but they'll make a fool of you. And it's all right, baby. It's all right. We're on a road to nowhere. There's a city in my mind. Come along and take that ride. And it's all right. Baby, it's all right. And it's very far away, but it's growing day by day. And it's all right. Baby, it's all right. Would you like to come along? You can help me sing this song. And it's all right. Baby, it's all right. They can tell you what to do, but they'll make a fool of you. And it's all right, baby. It's all right. We're on a road to nowhere. My concept for Tantra Studio, I think I've got my usual two notes written down, is mental and physical. And I don't know quite how much I have to say. Seems like I was a little bit, you know, how much energy I've got. I'm doing pretty good. So let's see where this goes. Here's my thought. Sex, as we think of it, is usually a physical experience. As we experience it, and as we want it, and the contact, and the openness, the nakedness, and the sharing, and all that is a physical experience. And then there are all of our ideas around sex, which contain many different introspective types of journeys and potential diversions, and also mental pleasures. And of the two, of the two possible, let's say, angles of approach of sexuality, it often seems that the more daring is the mental one. That physically, you know, it's easier to challenge yourself or to open up into an experience. But to bring your consciousness to it is another thing fully. And that can be as basic as your presence, not checking out, but being there. And that can ripple out into all the dimensions of feeling that you have, curiosity, very important element of sexuality, a kind of curiosity which is the craving for experience of a specific kind, and all the ways in which sexual experiences, sexual desire, and eroticism change us mentally and emotionally. And there is the spiritual element. And it is usually from a combination of the physical experiences and the psychic experiences that we get the formula where our sexuality emerges as much more than we were told that it was, where suddenly there is much more than we feared was taken away from us. Now, if there have been injuries in the past, and I've said many times and I'll say it again, there's not anyone in our society who does not in some way feel betrayed by sex. There may be people who've gotten over it. There may be people who recognized it and figured out how to transcend that and put it behind them. But to the present moment, I would propose that most people feel betrayed by sex. Something went wrong. Maybe you got an STI. You got pregnant when you didn't want to be pregnant. And then the abortion was traumatic and you never healed. The sex led to a relationship or relationships that you didn't want to be in. Children you maybe would not have had if you had been present and not chosen to do so. All of the forms of transgression that have been imposed on us, inappropriate touching, inappropriate ideation in children, the withholding of information, the open and blatant deception that kids are put through, all the mental and psychic abuses of the church, everyone carries with them some betrayal around sexuality. And that includes all of the seemingly negative emotions of guilt, shame, and embarrassment. And so when we talk about sex, when we talk about sexual healing, we're talking about the same thing. And when we approach the subject, it's important to bear in mind that there is going to be this buffer of injury, this kind of gray area, which may be an extremely painful area or just a kind of ambivalent area that needs to be worked with, approaching the center of our sexual being. We get to real desires, the more sincere need for experience. And so all of that betrayal is largely psychic material. There are not so many people whose physical experience of transgression is the thing that lingers with them. Right? Normally, the physical injuries, if there are any inflicted, and often there's not, sometimes they are, but they heal, the body heals, and then the lasting damage is psychic, emotional, and mental damage, largely damage to trust. And so when we talk about connecting psychically and spiritually to our sexuality, we're talking about bringing awareness to the experience, and then often that awareness is going to lead to awareness of the injuries, betrayal, shame, and guilt, and fear, lack of trust, and various painful injuries that we're carrying. So there is often an aversion to the psychic level, meaning the intellectual, emotional, spiritual level, because that's where all of the pain and struggle is accumulated. And so this is why I'm proposing that it is the more daring level to enter, the one where we go in fully awake, and in many instances not needing to bring the body along completely, not forgetting it, but it doesn't necessarily need to be a naked experience of rubbing bellies or something, but rather letting consciousness lead the way and remembering that there's this foggy territory that can conceal all kinds of stuff, which makes it the more courageous territory to be in, and the one where we may need the most guidance or hand-holding, and certainly the one where we need to bring the most love. Now, this percolates into the physical body because emotional injuries can and do take up residence in the somatic body. And so part of the sexual healing process can involve a lot of non-sexual touching and getting the body accustomed to being touched. Good massage therapists can do this. And, you know, you might get lucky and find one with whom you have a close relationship or where there is some extra trust, where the practitioner can begin to integrate some sexual touching into the non-sexual touching, i.e. the normal back, but gluteus maximus, you know, type of massage, triceps and biceps and all this stuff and scalp, excuse me. But then also some erogenous zone touching as well. This takes trust. And remember that trust is where most of the injury is. And so this is why I'm suggesting that we need to work primarily, initially, in the realm of trust, in the realm of the psychic, and slowly bring the body along, letting consciousness lead the way. And so here's where you get to have a lot of fun, because you get to use your imagination. and explore in your imagination what you might want. Now, I suggest taking this one realm past fantasy. Fantasy has an idle quality to it. I'm suggesting something more on the level of active imagination and some documentation that could be in the form of writing, art of any form, audio recording. This is a profound erotic tool to use audio recording. And listen to yourself. Record yourself and listen to yourself. Speak to yourself and listen to yourself speaking to yourself. Masturbate to orgasm. Record the whole thing and play it back lots of times and listen. And use your sexuality as a means of raising awareness in the psychic, emotional, and spiritual realms, and see what you learn and what you feel. And then you have an opportunity, again, in a trusting environment. You have to really be able to make a decision about whether you trust someone to be able to do this. And you have to concede that you may make the wrong decision and get hurt and have to move on and keep going. So concede those points and then begin to establish the trusting bonds. And you can feel the quality of the trusting bond because someone you know is willing to listen, to respond, and then to share about their reality. And then these relationships of listening, giving feedback, and sharing become the basis of a whole new kind of sexual relationship. Not the sexual relationship that involves coming home and having sex. Not the kind of sexual relationship that involves we had sex, therefore we must get married. Not the relationship where that dinner, assuming there's a restaurant open anywhere, you can find some fancy takeout food, must cost $200 or I'm not giving it up. No, not that stuff. The non-economic side of the sexual experience, the element of sexuality where the only agenda is trust, sharing, feeling, and loving. And by loving, I mean easy on the attachment, more on the trusting and the friendly bonding, and less about any form of so-called permanence. That these relationships, where the easygoing conversation happens, where the gradual revealing of your truth happens, where your ability to hear someone's truth and experience them in their truth, that becomes the foundation for all of your future sexual relationships. And once you do this, and you go through a transition period, you're likely to reach a point where you're unlikely to want to look back and go back to a thing where you can ever have sex with someone where there has not been a foundation of trust established through a series of conversations. And a gradually gradually emerging sexual curiosity that leads into a gradual form of exchange. And without that, it's not surprising how badly so many sexual relationships go, because there's no basis or foundation in trust. And because of the ways in which we're told sex must be, and the meaning and the value that we're told over and over and over again that it just has to have, otherwise it doesn't count, generally meaning some eighth house exchange of resources involved, or some form of, expected prolonged commitment, possession jealousy and all this stuff, the expectation of marriage, all that eighth house stuff, is what we're told to expect, or sex is not real. And I'm suggesting here that there exists a whole other realm that, if we're using astrology as a metaphor, is more along the fifth house, 11th house axis, which is the art space in the fifth house, the experimental pleasure art space, and the 11th house, which is the house of friendship and bonding and the common values of the people that we like to hang out with. And while we're on that axis, that whole cross, the second house, where you are self-possessed, where you respect yourself and place a value on yourself and what you offer and all that you have, crucial to ground yourself in your second house, where you're, for a long time, your whole exploration of your sexuality can be about valuing what you are and what you possess. Now, there's plenty of people who do this and never want to get to a place of sharing. Then they wonder why there's not sharing. And so implicit in this is the idea that you will eventually want to share what you've got and have some form of mutual experience. But the mutual experience and the sharing is the thing that grows out of a context of gradually developing trust. This is said simply as getting to know people, but a lot of getting to know people doesn't involve getting to know the specific nuances of their sexuality and their sexual history, their desires, their wants, their needs, their experiences. And that's what I'm suggesting. And so, for example, in the course of certain friendships, you know, you may have friendships that are ready for this right now that have existed for a while. You can set up a thing where you share your whole sexual history with someone. You tell the whole story. And then maybe the next time you meet, you fill in the things that you forgot, and you take turns sharing the chronology and the details of your sexual history. This is liberating. It is highly informative. And you find out where people are coming from, and you find out where you're coming from, and then you find out where the two meet. People conceal a lot. And by people, I mean married people, people in relationships conceal a lot about their sexuality. And you can start with knowing your whole history. Write down a list of every lover you've ever had, and remember how you felt about them and what you learned and what you explored. I did that once, and my girlfriend took the page out of my notebook. I had a nice loose leaf notebook as a diary, and the page vanished. Hello, Hillary. That was around 1994. I'm like, wow, she really stole the page out of my notebook. I learned something about her. She was a very jealous and possessive person who also lacked the basic ethics to be honest. So in your psychic and mental exploration with people, one of the things you're doing is feeling out how honest you feel you can be. And as you share your experiences with different people, you're going to have different feeling tones around your sensation of confidence and safety in being honest. And then I would propose that where there are circumstances where sexual feelings start to arise and where the curiosity becomes a mutual curiosity that wants to be expressed in a physical way, that that's the place where you enter sex through sharing masturbation. Rather than completely plunging in to the big eighth house mashup, where you can share lots of karma and recombine the genetic code, cut back on the karma, cut back on the, eliminate the genetic code sharing and recombination, and just experience your sexuality with a person and experience their sexuality with you. Is this starting to come into focus and make sense as a sexual modality? Because I know there's like a lot of people who think it's completely freaky to masturbate with someone that you're not like married to or something like that. And I'm saying, I don't know. I think it's kind of freaky to marry somebody you don't masturbate with. Hey, it's kind of freaky to take someone as your partner or girlfriend or boyfriend that you haven't done a lot of masturbation with. But this, look, this is your old Uncle Eric here, you know, who's been contemplating this for many years, and you know, where a lot of Betty's ideas, her early initial ideas, I mean, I've taken things in very much in my own direction. And is it true, by the way, that there was a New York Times article written about Betty Dodson? I mean, talk about late to the party. I mean, she's been in business for 50 years. I mean, she just turned 90 in August of 2019. And I heard somebody asked me, Lorraine Hutchinson, somebody asked me for where that was. I haven't had a chance to check. I've become a hobby virologist. And in any event, the idea here that trust is gradually built and that it's based on communication and it's based on your experience of what it's like to be honest and what it's like to feel another person be honest, which is going to include some encounter with their pain and their pleasure, all their mixed emotions. If you can do that with someone, that's a wonderful basis for a friendship. And I think a whole new kind of relationship. You have to have better relationships. I've done 1,000 postmortems as an astrologer. I'm like the Quincy of astrologers. Divorces. Done 1,000 divorces. And the situation is quite sad of what people do to each other. And to do different things and to feel differently, we're going to need to approach relationships differently. Well, that is what I have to say to you on this fine evening. We are going to jump out with a triple talking heads. Pleasure to be in contact with you and to share this time in this space with you. You know where to find me if you'd like to write to me. All right. Till next time. Here you go. Thank you.
Don't you dare speak up. Oh, but on that first day. the time.